You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Rhys Davies.
There was playoff drama in Mauritius, but in the end, 18-year-old Rasmus Højgaard prevailed to win his first European Tour title.
It's amazing. I'm over the moon right now. To win so early in my career is amazing, and I'm looking forward to the next challenge.
We'll hear from the Dane, as well as the two second-place finishers at the Afrasia Bank Mauritius Open, Italian Renato Paratore and Frenchman Antoine Rosner. Plus, we'll tell you why it was seventh heaven for Peter Fowler, and the man who topped the 2019 Challenge Tour rankings, Francesco Laporta, will join us live on the show. That's all to come on the European Tour Race to Dubai show. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm delighted to say that joining me is professional golfer Rhys Davies. Rhys, how are you?
Yes, very well, thank you, Dan.
And also golf coach and YouTuber Peter Finch, who has taken around about 6 hours to get here today. This is why we've got a late record on a Monday as we stretch towards midday. Usually we are done and dusted. You're on your way back to Manchester, but we're only just starting.
I know.
The blame is completely at your feet at the moment.
And listen, I take it on the chin. It's just one of those things, Dan.
It is.
Oh, I can't do anything about it.
I know.
And I appreciate it if you just left it alone for a little bit, because it's still quite a sore subject.
I will not mention it again, I promise you. Rhys, you drove in today. You were on time.
Yep, just left plenty of time to get
exactly,
here.
Rhys has got a much nicer car than me.
That's true, yeah. Prepare to fail and fail to prepare. Oh, no, hang on. Is it the way around? Fail to prepare and prepare to fail. Or is it the other way around? Anyway, forget that. Rhys, how has your year been so far?
Yeah, very quiet, actually. I've taken a little bit of time away from the game, concentrated much more on my family, and, yeah, travelled far less, which has been... I've really appreciated it, really enjoyed it. It's been refreshing to be at home.
Mauritius Open, we're going to look back on. Rasmus Højgaard became the third youngest winner in European Tour history, with a dramatic playoff triumph at the Afrasia Bank sponsored event. 18-year-old Dane birdied the 72nd hole to get to 19 under alongside Italian Renato Paratore and Frenchman Antoine Rosner as the event went to a playoff for the third time in as many stagings at the Heritage Golf Club. At one stage, Rhys, I think there was seven, maybe eight players on 18 under. It looked like we're going to have this huge playoff like we had in Turkey. It was an incredible end to the event, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I thoroughly enjoyed watching it, to watch these young players who were raw in their European Tour experience, going at it, trying to make birdies, trying to make eagles to win their first event. They showed little to no fear, little to no nerves. Yeah, I thought it was a great sign, and it showed the strength and depth that's on the European Tour.
I mean, one or two players and names that most people might not have heard of unless you were a significant European Tour geek like we all are, but they were playing fantastic golf, weren't they? I mean, the amount of birdies they were making down the stretch, there were so many holes that the players I thought were pulling out shots that were truly world-class, I thought.
Well, you get into a stage, and certainly this tournament, where there's a lot of players around the same score. And if you are a scoreboard watcher, then you know you've got to go for it. You know, none of these guys now, they're going to, when they're at the top of the leaderboard, none of them are going to start heading backwards when it's so tightly bunched. So that's why you saw it so attacking. And I've got to be honest, that last hole was really good for that as well. You know, opportunity, but also danger. And I mean, the way that Rasmus, by the way, what a name. That's a name that's gone out of fashion. The way that he actually played, not the last hole, but also the three playoff holes as well. So he went birdie, 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 eagle to wrap it up. I mean, that's pretty awesome. You can't look for a better finish than that, really.
Looking at the leaderboard with about five or six holes to go, I thought that Thomas Detry was probably going to win. He was the man seemingly playing the best golf. He made a double on the 11th and then he bogeyed 17. He's one of these players that gets tipped up, certainly on this show, an awful lot that we expect him to win. Hasn't won on tour just yet. He was part of the Belgian World Cup winning side, but in my mind, he was the favourite going into the back nine. How did you see it?
Yeah, I can see why you thought that. Dietrich disappointed me a fair bit, if I'm honest, at the towards the latter stage of the tournament. He looks such a good talent. Obviously, swings the club beautifully. And to me, he made two quite big errors on the back nine, on number 11 and number 17, costing him three shots there. And obviously, even if you just drop one or two, he arguably wins the tournament. So, yeah, he'll be kicking himself today. But, you know, I'm sure he'll be back. He's featured on the top of leaderboards regularly. And, yeah, he'll just have to file it away and come back stronger.
Winning's hard, though. That's the thing. I mean, you could be a really, really good player. Reese knows this, you know, better than me, you ever will. You know, being a really good golfer, being in contention. At the end of the day, you're up against other really good golfers who are also in contention. And there's only one player who can win a tournament. So, yeah, all you've got to do is just keep putting yourself up that. I saw that this year, well, last season, as it is now, with Matt Fitzpatrick. I mean, how many top fives did he have? And how many did he convert to wins? You know, not as many as he would have liked. But the consistency factor in keeping up there, that's how you eventually get over the line.
Antoine Rosner got to 19 under with a birdie on 14. He's got four holes left, including the par 5, 18th. And you think, well, surely he's going to birdie one of the last to get to 20 under. That would have been enough. He laid up on the last hole. Was that a mistake, do you think?
Easy to say yes now. But obviously that's how we saw the hole being played. And I'm not sure what he did in previous rounds on that hole as well.
He struggled on the par 5, hadn't he? I think he struggled on that hole. I think he was level par over the course of the 4 days in regulation on 18. And when it came to the playoff, the other two players in it, Paratori and Højgaard, were, I think, 4 and 3 under. So he'd not played it as well as others.
So it might have been the case he was on that tee and he just felt a little bit uncomfortable on that hole. You'd probably say it's a smarter game plan to play that hole conservatively if you're not comfortable on it than just closing your eyes and hoping you hit a good shot on the second. You're better being committed to your game plan. And obviously, you know, it got him up there and into a chance of winning. It just, you know, again, just didn't quite get over the line.
Yeah, I just think he was determined by the tee shot. I don't think he had a bad tee shot in regulation, but it was just in slightly hanging lie in the right-hand semi or just in the fluffy stuff. And I remember watching it, and because of the hanging lie, it would have been very, very easy to get a quick hook, turn it over into the water, and then obviously the opposite of that is to bail out right, which would have left a really difficult pitch over a bunker onto a downslope. I actually felt in that exact circumstance he made the right decision. By laying up, he guaranteed himself a playoff. He had a good opportunity to put a wedge in there close. And if you've been critical, he probably should have hit his wedge closer. And if he did his wedge closer, then he may have well have won it outright. But, you know, just it was determined by the tee shot not being on the fairway, I think, is what you know, made him lay up.
It's interesting because he's won on the Challenge Tour, hasn't he, this year? And the confidence I would imagine that you've got by winning, I thought that he might have gone for it a little bit more. You know, simply you're a winner. You know, you've been down the stretch. You know, you go for it. I don't know.
You've just been told by
Well,
I'm going to put myself in there. An average coach with a camera on YouTube and an actual very
good
golfer.
European Tour winner.
We're right and you're wrong.
Yeah,
now,
no,
it's time
I know.
To just
exactly. No,
Thomas, it's just time to accept the decision.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just let it go.
It just surprised me, though, because every single player on that last hole was pretty much going for the green in two, if they could. You know, lie or not lie. Only the players that were either go, you know, it was out of bounds, that long grass wasn't on the right-hand side that wanted to, Hébert went in and one or two others as well. I'm just surprised, you know, he's a winner on Challenge Tour, should he not just go for it? Obviously he didn't. And I just felt from then on in he seemed to be at a disadvantage in the playoff. Do you not feel that?
Well, he went...
That was Højgaard's hole that 18th. I mean,
he was on it that hole.
Yeah, you know, he drove it brilliantly in regulation and in the three playoff holes as well. It's like he was in pole position on that hole every single time he played it. Obviously, Rosner didn't know at the time, but he put himself a little bit under pressure, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Højgaard obviously had a beautiful high draw going, it seemed, and that's what the hole suited. And it wasn't quite as comfortable for Rosner in that sense. But you can only play the circumstances. You can only play the lie it gives you, the situation it gives you. You got to remember, it's his first time, I believe, really in any kind of situation. He won twice back-to-back on the Challenge Tour earlier this year. So he's obviously comfortable. And I was impressed with him. I mean, he arguably played effectively with the lead or near the lead the whole week long. And he handled himself incredibly well. I think he should and will take a lot from it. And also, I was actually impressed that he was quite disappointed when he effectively lost. Showed he was really trying to win. And it'd be quite easy to say, oh, well, I've done pretty well, I finished second. But Not at all. He quite clearly wanted to win that tournament, and it was refreshing to see a disappointment on his face.
A word on Paratore. Chucked it in the water on the first playoff hole.
And that's the danger of that hole. You know, that's why if you are uncomfortable with that second shot, you know, laying up's not a bad ploy. Obviously, in the playoff, it is slightly different in respects that you've got to give it everything right then at that moment, or you're gonna walk away not winning. So it's a slightly different situation, but it was quite good kind of finishing hole four that added the drama. Obviously, had the spectators out on the water as well.
I love that on the little jetty.
Yeah.
The sort of VIPs with the Pims and then
a lot of G&Ts went flying when that went in the water.
Absolutely. Running for cover. I thought that was brilliant. The finishing hole was great looking out on television. I mean, obviously, they're not huge fans in terms of the size of the galleries, but I thought it looked brilliant, the golf course and the way it was set out. And even the fans behind the final two ball coming through, I thought that was a real nice touch because you don't see it on every single event, do you?
No.
No, the sponsors, all the local people in Mauritius who came out should be very proud of themselves. I agree, it looked fantastic. A great theatre, great spectacle. And they've got a very worthy champion.
Yeah, well, you can't argue with birdieing the last in regulation and then birdieing the first playoff hole, the second playoff hole, and then getting an eagle. I mean, he had opportunities to notch a three previously. I mean, he has won that event. He's not been given it, has he? He's definitely won it.
Oh, he went after it, yeah. He went after it. And that's probably the most impressive part about it. You know, being a young guy, I don't know if it's just, you know, the confidence. He's obviously a great player, but to have that amount of courage and that amount of steel under the pressure for your first win on the tour, I mean, you know, takes a lot of balls to take that shot on as well, and that last over the water.
Well, let's hear from the man himself, Rasmus Højgaard.
It's amazing. I'm over the moon right now. That's all I can say.
As the back nine unfolded, you hit some good shots, some clutch parts that up and down at 14, and then talk us through that one to get you into the playoff.
Yeah, we were a bit in between numbers on the last hole here, so I picked one that was like just carry the green and will leave myself with a long putt. A good two putt from there, I guess.
First European Tour playoff. How are you feeling going on to the 18th tee?
I was obviously nervous, but again, I'm in a situation where I don't have anything to lose, so I was confident that I was going to hit some good shots coming in, and I did.
What about the way you played 18? Because you birdie in regulation, you then go birdie, birdie, eagle to win. You must be pretty proud of the way you closed that one out.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That's all I can say. I mean, three good approach shots into 18 and got it done on third hole. So, yeah.
Third youngest winner on the European Tour. You joined the likes of Seve Ballesteros, Sergio Garcia, guys to win before their 20th birthday. What's it like to be in that conversation now?
It's cool. I never thought of that. To win so early in my career is amazing, and I'm looking forward to the next challenge.
Most importantly, how will you celebrate?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I'm going to celebrate when I get home to my family and friends. We'll probably have a little party there.
18 years and 271 days old, Højgaard becomes the third youngest winner in European Tour history. Can you name the two players who achieved this feat at a younger age?
Matteo Manassero
is one of them.
Yep, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that's the easy one. He won twice. I think he won twice as a 17-year-old.
Really?
Yeah.
I know. I played that tournament. Yeah. I remember.
What's happened to Matteo Manassero? He's dropped off the face of the earth, hasn't he? Yeah, it's a real shame. Yeah, the one it went with, didn't he? Do you know the other one? Remember, this is a podcast, so silence is not very good.
Did Shane Lowry win when he was...
No.
Was he an older amateur?
He was an older amateur, wasn't he? Yeah. Didn't get the cash that week, did he? But
Robert Rock, didn't he?
Robert Rock got the money, yeah. Good knowledge.
I don't know. Well, did they just say Seve and Sergio in there? I can't imagine.
He's a New Zealander.
Danny Lee.
Danny Lee is the correct answer.
Thank you.
Good effort.
Oh, another, what happened to Danny Lee, by the way?
Yeah, maybe another one. Does he play on the PGA Tour now, I think? Does he?
Danny, yeah.
I don't know if he's still got his card.
No, maybe possibly not.
He's had some pretty good success.
Yeah, bits and
he's
pieces.
He's definitely a winner.
It's maybe a key don't win. Like when you're 18 on European Tour. It might be a Might be a curse.
Did we know anything about Højgaard before his win? He's got his twin brother on tour as well, hasn't he? I don't think he's got status at the moment, hasn't he? That's Nikolaj.
Yeah, but he did finish second at the KLM Open in September, I believe. And I don't know the twins, but I've heard about them over the last year and a half, as long as that. And it's rare to hear of up-and-coming amateurs in the professional game, you know, that much. You hear the odd snippet here or there, but to be fair, us pros don't usually, you know, look too much into that. But to hear a lot about this up-and-coming youngsters, these two players, must suggest they're obviously fairly decent, and the results are now proving that.
We talked about the way he played the final hole. He's very long off the tees now. I think he was booming drives 350, 360 yards. We talk about the, you know, strength of players and how that's almost the be-all and end-all at the moment. But, I mean, when you can hit it that sort of distance at 18 years old, you're not doing too wrong, are you?
No, and it's not... Obviously, he was smashing it a long way, but he was pretty accurate with it. Now, that's obviously a very dangerous combination. You know, if you're absolutely massive off the tee and you can keep it in play most of the time, then, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, bit of island air helping and coconuts and relaxed atmosphere.
Absolutely,
around the place.
Yeah. No, it's all worked out well for him. There's no doubt about that.
I was impressed also. He seemed to be moving the ball both ways in the air.
Yeah.
He could shape it into his flags and to hold it up or ride certain wind conditions, which... That's a telltale sign that you really are in control of your ball, not just hitting it a long way.
It makes him the fastest Dane to a European Tour win, incidentally, beating 15-time winner and 2018 Ryder Cup captain Thomas Bjorn's record of 24 events. He managed to score in just his fifth European Tour event. And this is what Bjorn tweeted afterwards. He said, "Unreal performance from Rasmus Højgaard, 18 years old and performing like that. Him and his twin brother Nikolaj will be a force in European golf for many years to come. Just amazing." And Bjorn then went one step further, sending this message to the young Dane.
"Well, dear young Rasmus, you interrupted my Christmas lunch today by me sitting there watching you on TV. Absolutely amazing. Brilliant performance. You owe me a turkey sandwich. But... you know, the future is very bright because the future is very Danish with you and your brother. Can only say congratulations. Amazing performance. Just so, so proud of you."
Am I missing something?
Yeah,
is this a kind of parallel universe
I don't know.
We've just slipped into?
Yeah, first thing to pick up, why is he having his Christmas lunch on December the 7th?
I think someone needs to check in with Thomas and make sure he's okay. He's obviously woken up and someone's changed all his calendars around.
What's he having his Christmas lunch for 3 weeks early?
He's probably just wandering around town. Oh, God, no one's Christmassy this year.
Must enjoy it. I don't know. That's obviously he's a turkey lover.
Yeah, obviously.
Maybe he starts early.
Obviously, Danish players coming through on tour. We've seen a few over the years, and it would appear we've got another couple coming through. Thomas Bjorn is very happy as well. Scandinavia generally producing good golfers again.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll have to look into that a little bit more. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of top up-and-coming players and a Danish winner of the Q School just recently as well. So, it's... They're up and coming fast, and there's plenty of them. Yes, obviously there's the Højgaard twins, but there's many others that have been performing well for a long time.
And seemingly younger as well. Does it feel like the European Tour is getting younger in terms of players coming through? Does it feel like the average age is getting down?
Definitely, yeah.
Does it make you feel old,
Rich? It does. It's incredible.
This is what I'm suggesting.
I know you are.
Are older players fearful of youngsters coming on?
I think the sport in general is getting younger. I think we'll see. I felt it for a while. I felt that careers in golf will actually possibly get shorter and shorter. The sport is far more athletic. It's arguably more demanding on the body. It's more demanding on the mind and on travel, etc. It's like many other sports around the world. It's very much a young man's game, and so it'll be harder, I believe, to be longer, to be successful for longer, and therefore the youngsters coming through are fearless and they're strong and they're excellent players.
The perception is of golf, isn't it? The sort of traditional perception that, you know, you can still be competitive and play at the top of the game you know, into your 40s, do you think, as Reese is suggesting, that might change? I mean, obviously, there's still going to be some players who will be able to play for longer, but the average age of tour golfers and winners might come down a bit.
I'm not sure. I mean, you get players, you know, just look at the European Tour, you know, your Lee Westwoods, for example. You know, if you've got a good technique, there's no reason why you can't go on for a long, long time. Talking about make you feel old, by the way, am I right in saying that Rasmus is going to be the player to have been born in the 21st
That's
century
correct.
To win?
Yeah, first, yeah, you're right.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's depressing.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously not for him.
Not for him, no, he's got it all ahead of him.
Yeah,
for us,
gone.
It's all behind.
Yeah.
Let's hear from the men who took Højgaard to that playoff. In a moment, you'll hear from Frenchman Antoine Rosner, but first up, the Italian Renato Paratore.
I pulled it on the left, the second one, but was not the best shot. I think I aim too much on the left. I am like 1 meter left of the green. I try to cut it and stay there. So, but maybe it was better to aim more on the right, but that's it.
What positives can you take from this week?
Oh, well, I play really solid. I play really good in the weekend. And then, you know, at the playoff can happen everything. So it's been still a good week.
It's not easy. And you fight hard for 4 days and you have everything come down to a one playoff hole. And I don't know, I saved some amazing birdies on the first two holes. So I have nothing to regret. I gave my best. And congrats to Rasmus. I mean, he hit some amazing shots coming down the stretch. So, yeah, congrats to him.
I mean, you got to be so proud of yourself in that playoff, the up and down from the bunker. You made that clutch birdie.
Yeah.
So when the pressure is on, I mean, he's made eagle to beat you. So a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, for sure. It's actually funny because that bunker shot, I told my caddy right before, this can go in the stand or stay in the trap because I was trying to catch it so clean and... Yeah, it came out probably one of the best bunker shots I've ever hit. So, no, I'm just very happy. All the hard work is paying off. It's a very good result, so I'm very happy.
It's always a standard interview question, isn't it? What's the positives you can take out of it? But he was a bit gutted, I think, wasn't he, there? You mentioned it earlier. And that's the attitude that you want, isn't it? You don't want to just think second's okay.
You play to win. It's the pinnacle. It's what everyone's trying to do out on tour. And I truly believe that if you're given a chance, however small it might be, you've got to go for it because the benefits for winning far, far outweigh the consolation prizes.
When the dust settles, does he take positives from that performance? When do you analyse a second place finish? When do you sit down and think, actually, you know, I was all right then?
When you probably check your bank account.
Yeah, exactly.
Ching,
I don't know.
Ching,
you know, does it actually happen? Do golfers think, yeah, you know, on reflection, I've had a really good week there?
Yeah, I mean, you beat everyone apart from one guy. And you know, McIlroy was saying this year, this is his favourite year as far as playing goes because of the amount of consistency that he's had. And that's what these guys are looking for. You're not going to win, well, generally, you're not going to win the first time you're in contention. You know, there's other people who are more experienced who are going to come up. Obviously, you know, Rasmus has completely blown that out of the water, I think, this time. But you know what I mean? You know, you need that experience. You need that consistency of being up there around the top of the leaderboard to actually get across the line. And, you know, put yourself in that position 10 times, you might get across it twice, three times, unless you're an amazing player.
There's also argument, though, to say that consistency is overrated in golf and you're better off winning once or twice and
rather than multiple top 10s.
Yeah. 10th and 20th places, although you rightly say they highlight good golf, they don't necessarily show up on the Race to Dubai ranking list.
Yeah, it's true. You get rewarded so much more for the win than just general consistency.
Is that talked about from a psychological point of view then? If you're working with a sports psychologist, is it more important just to peak and get those wins and not worry about sort of week to week if you're not playing particularly well? How does that work? How can you tune your mind into that sort of mindset where it's just about the wins?
I think everyone's slightly different. I think some guys, some players, some minds are okay at the fluctuation in success levels. And I think other players struggle with that. They need to feel like their game is always there or thereabouts and you're always making cuts, you're always threatening top tens. So I think there's a lot of, you know, it depends who you are. And therefore, I think it's important to know who you are and know what you sort of thrive off and what makes you feel good about your own game.
Renato Paratore, just one final word on him. He was the only winner on the European Tour in that playoff. Would he have drawn anything from his win? It was a few years ago now, wasn't it? Was it the Scandinavian Open? I can't remember which one it was, in Sweden or Denmark. But he was the winner on tour. Would he have felt like, you know, I'm the more confident guy in the room here? Because he went for that shot, second shot, found the water. How does it work when you're you're up against two rookies, two players who haven't won on tour? How does that work?
Yeah, it can work to his benefit. I thought he went for it yesterday. I thought he really.
If he's a Challenge Tour graduate, does he not go for it?
Again, it depends who you are. He strikes me as someone who's trying to win almost whenever he plays. He's got that sort of flair, that passion, and that drive to be successful. So I thought he was playing he was really going for it. He let a couple of shots slip on the back nine, and his putting didn't quite look as strong as the others. But full credit to his attitude. I thought he was really into it. And yeah, okay, he had a bad shot going for a par five in two, or just slipped off the edge. But he didn't seem too bothered about it.
Paratore, unfortunately, went out the first playoff hole. It was a win for Rasmus Højgaard, as we know. Time to get the top 10 of the Afrasia Bank Mauritius Open. And Peter's got the details for us.
Okay. Right. Let's give this a go. Not the best at European names at times. Okay. So you had Rasmus Højgaard, who won, and then in joint second after playoff, Renato Paratore, see, I'm panicking already, Anthony Rosner, Luis de Jager, Thomas Dietry, Grant Forrest, there we go. Good, strong Scottish name. Could do with some more Scots up here. We've got Benjamin Herbert. Oh, hello. Robin Chio Segrist.
I think that's pretty good. Frenchman. Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Apologies to all my Gaelic friends. Oliver Becker and Julian Gurrier.
And there's another couple who tie for ninth as well.
Siwon Kim and Connor Syme.
Fantastic event. Anyone else that we should mention in dispatches here? Because going into it, I think the likes of Thomas Peters was one of the favourites, always tends to play well, never puts as well as I think that he should do, given the amount of chances that he seems to get. Brandon Stone, Christian Bezuidenhout were sort of local favourites that were up amongst the leaderboard over the first two, 3 days, then slipped away. I thought Brandon Stone had a good chance and then seemed to start very badly, I think, on the Saturday with a triple. Any other players and dispatches that we should mention, do you think?
Yeah, I like your pick on Brandon Stone. I think he's starting to show signs of the form we know he can show. He's an exceptional player. I think he's had a quiet season, hasn't had anywhere near the success he's capable of. And perhaps this is the start of things to come for him, building for a big 2020.
Peter, anyone that caught your eye?
Two Scots there, to be fair. Conor Syme and Callum Hill. Callum had a bad last day, and it just took him out of it. So I think it's always one of the most surprising things to me why the world top 50 isn't just awash with Scots. The amount of courses that they've got up there. And obviously they've been through a bit of a dearth recently of players. Seems to be changing around a little bit now, which would be amazing. I much prefer to see more Scots up there.
Callum Hill has had some success, hasn't he? And also fared well in the few European Tour events that we've seen him play. And actually played on the PGA Tour, didn't he, a few weeks ago as well. Is he one to watch, do you think, for 2020?
Yeah, I like the look of Callum. He's one of... I've sort of picked out two players come through Challenge Tour, and he'd definitely be one of those who I would think and expect to do well this season. He seems very consistent, which is quite unusual for a young, inexperienced player. But his all-round game looks really solid, good demeanour, but he seems competitive and hungry. And yeah, I think he shows a lot of promise.
Predictions from last week, a reminder of our usual format. We get two picks. One has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2019 Race to Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. Last week's predictions, Ewan Murray went for Shubhankar Sharma and Callum Hill. Shubhankar missed the cut. Callum Hill managed to top 20, so that's 0 points for Ewan. I went for Romain Langasque, who was just outside the top 20, tied 26, and also Jaco van Zyl, who missed the cut, so I was minus 5. And Chris Ryan, who was our guest last week, did very well. Thomas Dietry was fourth, 10 points, and George Kurtsia, 21st, 0 points, but 10 points for our guest, which means overall presenters are on minus 5, co-presenters on 5, and the guests are early leaders on 20. And speaking of predictions, a reminder that the new Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game will kick off early in the new year. So make sure you stay across EuropeanTour.com for all the latest when it comes to the 2020 Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. Race to Dubai itself, we have got the top 10. And Reese, you can let us know which players populate that top 10.
Yes, very early season rankings, obviously. But the top 10 in reverse order as follows. Grant Forrest occupying the 10th spot. Jonas Fiermann in 9th. We have three players in the tied 6th position. That's Charles Schwartzel, Will Bessling and Brandon Grace. Off his playoff loss is Antoine Rosner in 5th and also Renato Paratore in 4th. Joel Scholem is in 3rd. Rasmus Højgaard, our winner, in 2nd. And Pablo Larrazabal occupying the top spot.
Who is your tip to both of you to win the Race to Dubai in 2020? Who do you think might top the standings come autumn of next year? Who do you like?
Rahm. If it stays, if the kind of schedule stays the same and his commitment stays the same, he's the best player in the world probably at the moment. I can't really see anyone.
When you say commitment, playing in those Rolex Series events as well as the majors WGCs, because you've got to play in a few of those as well, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, and I think he will do. I think he actually genuinely enjoys coming back over and playing in Europe, which is good. You know, we need that support off the very best players in the world. So I imagine this year he's going to get to number one, he's going to win a major, and he'll probably win Race to Dubai, if he stays like it is.
Bruce, who do you like?
Yeah, I like Rahm too. It's an obvious one, I know. But I think he's...
Why are we not saying Rory in this conversation? Because he might not play as many events, or we just think that John Rahm's a better player or prospectively better player for 2020?
I just think he's... I think he has the potential to be... have a better record by the end of his career than Rory. He's just so consistent, so driven, it looks like, as well. And he just wants to win every single time he plays. And he pretty much almost does win every single time he plays.
His record in Europe is phenomenal. What marks him out as someone special to you?
Well, he's very hungry. I think that's quite evident. And more than anything, he seems, down the stretch of a tournament, he seems to either get it done or you know, just get beaten by someone. He doesn't seem to give anything away. I mean, at the end of the Race to Dubai, he was struggling there for a little bit on the back nine, but, you know, could easily have lost it. Regroup, made a fantastic birdie at the last to win the whole thing. He seems to do that often, and I think that's what stands out to me. Obviously, he's a great player, but it's his clutch performances down the stretch.
Other news. On the PGA Tour, Henrik Stenson held off Ryder Cup teammate John Rahm to clinch a one-shot victory at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. Rahm only second here. Stenson getting the job done. Pleased to see Henrik back in the winner's enclosure. Tiger Woods, I thought, was on course to win this, which surprised me, because I think all the sort of off-course stuff, because this is his event, always takes a bit out of him. But he is obviously very, very driven. I'm never quite sure what to make of this event, because obviously it's invitation only, it's Tiger's event, it's for a good cause. But over the last few years, I get the impression that all these players are desperate to win it. It's almost like a proper event. I know it's only a small field, but they too take it seriously, don't they?
Yeah, I think, well, there's obviously, you know, some of the very best players in the world are in that field. So they're going to want to compete. They're going to want to try and beat each other. I still think it feels, obviously, it still feels very relaxed in many respects, because it is, you know, it's invitation only. But there is money available. There is world ranking points available as well. So that's, you know, why they're going to be taking it a little bit more seriously now.
Yeah, I think if you just get the invitation from Tiger Woods, it's hard, obviously, not to turn it down, but B, to not go there and try and compete with the best, arguably the best ever. So many of the players playing in the field will have either grown up watching him or been somewhat part of his whole aura and his whole career, that they just would, you know, thrive on the opportunity to go and compete against him.
Also during the action in the Bahamas, Patrick Reed given a two-shot penalty after appearing to flatten out Sam before a bunker shot during the third round. It scuppered his chances of winning. He came in for an awful lot of criticism on social media. An awful lot of ex-golfers were taking him to task, and we all know that this did not look good, did it, Peter?
It just comes to the fact that the players have to then hold the other players to account. I think the tours can do a certain amount, they need to do a certain amount about this, but certainly in President's Cup this week, when he goes down to Australia, he's going to get
some stick, isn't he?
He's going to get stick. He's going to get a branch, not just a stick. Might even leave the leaves on for him. The point of golf is that it is a game of honour, and you are meant to self-police to the, you know, to the rules. And
it doesn't work otherwise.
It doesn't work. It's completely pointless. If that, you're just going to need a referee for every match. And I think for the most part, most golfers, you know, social media, but everywhere else as well, you know, they just basically stood up and said, this isn't on, which I think's good. You know, I think if everyone can stand up and kind of show a united front towards this, then it's going to be much better for the future of the game if people still understand that it is a game of respect. It is a game of calling penalties on yourself, even when it's hard to do. That's the whole point of our game, really.
The punishment from the governing body, from the tour itself, they should be in a position where they can hand out a more severe penalty if they want to.
Should he have been disqualified?
To the letter of the law, no, because the way the rules were broken, it was the penalty that he got. But yeah, there are other instances. Simon Dyson, for example, on the European Tour, stepping out of spite mark, getting fined and banned for a certain amount of time. You know, is that going to happen here? Probably not, especially with the events that are coming up. But I think it is something that does need to be looked at a little bit more seriously.
Back to the action itself. John Rahm, we mentioned, was second. And we've just been talking about who we think might win the Race to Dubai in 2020. He has been named Hilton European Tour Golfer of the Year. And just given what you two guys were saying a few moments ago, that is completely just. He was the best player in 2019 as far as European were concerned, maybe even as far as the world is concerned. I don't know. Depends how you see it. You go along with that?
I do. There is a glaring omission in his CV, and that's the major championship. We all feel he's more than capable of winning it. We all feel it's on the near future rather than the far. But as we know with other players, the longer that goes on, the more challenging that can be. The good thing for him is his style of golf is capable of winning any of the four majors. So he really does have a chance to win any of them at any given year. So let's push for him and look to see him winning one of those this coming season.
There was another event on the Australasian Tour. It was the Australian Open. And Matt Jones won his second Australian Open title in 4 years after beating Louis Oosthuizen by one shot in Sydney. Decent event, this. We had Adam Scott playing pretty poorly. We had Paul Casey, who I think led certainly after two rounds, but fell away. Matt Jones coming good in the end. And I guess for a few of the players, they're warming up for the President's Cup, those that are in Ernie Els's team. And Matt Jones coming good in the end. Louis, who should have won a few weeks ago in South Africa, I mean, he keeps running into one or two good players or just failing right at the end of tournaments. I'm feeling for him a little bit at the minute, the South African.
Yeah, he's obviously an outstanding player. He plays around the world more than most. And I think he was just a little bit behind in this event. I think an eagle at the last hole threw him into contention when he probably wasn't really quite there. I think even Matt Jones admitted it surprised him at the end. He thought he had a bigger lead than he did. And in the end, he did very well to maintain his lead and win the tournament very, very, very well. But yeah, Louis, great play. He'll be a real key member of that President's Cup team next week.
Japanese amateur Takumi Kanaya finished tied for third with Australian Aaron Pike on 9-under, and they join Matt Jones in qualifying for next year's Open Championship at Royal St George's. Top 10 in the world next. I can't imagine that there's been any movement over the course of the top 10, but Peter can remind us of the best players in the world as it stands.
Yep, so we'll go in reverse order. At 10, we've got Tommy Fleetwood. At 9, Xander Schauffele. And we've got Justin Rose at 8, Patrick Cantlay at 7, Tiger Woods at 6, Dustin Johnson at 5, Justin Thomas at 4, John Rahm, the big man, at 3, Rory McIlroy at 2, and at the top, we've got Brooks Koepka.
I was going to ask you who you fancy to be world number one this time next year, but I guess you're both going to say John Rahm.
I think so.
Yeah. Let's move on. Peter Fowler recorded a final round 67 to win his seventh Stayshore Tour title at the MCB Tour Championship in the Seychelles. The Australian, who won last year's Willow Senior Classic, started the final round four shots adrift of leader James Kingston, but carded a three-under-par round, including a bogey-free back nine, to beat the South African by one stroke. Good to see Peter Fowler back in the winner's enclosure.
Yep, been playing great golf for many years now, many years. Really nice guy. I remember meeting him and playing with him when I first started out. He's he can swing it smoothly and still hold putts. He's a great player.
Mauritius for the European Tour, the Seychelles for the Stayshore Tour. It's not bad life, is it, if you're a pro golfer at whatever level?
Yeah, I should have practiced harder. Should have worked harder as a kid.
Shout to our friend Paul Eales, who's a guest on the show an awful lot over the course of the year. He carded a final round of 69 to join Price and Mauricio Molina of Argentina in a share for third, two strokes behind Peter Fowler. Meanwhile, the Challenge Tour has announced its 2020 international schedule. We'll begin with a maiden visit to South Africa for three tournaments, which will launch the Road to Mallorca. The trio of events will be co-sanctioned by the Sunshine Tour and mark the beginning of the Road to Mallorca rankings, which will encompass a minimum of 25 tournaments in 15 countries across three continents, playing for a total prize fund which exceeds €6 million. Players will compete for one of 20 spots on the European Tour in 2021. That's an increase of five from the 2019 season. The Netherlands will return as a host country on the Challenge Tour for the first time since 2009. In 2019, the Challenge Tour Grand Final was held at Club de Golf Alcanada, and the tournament will remain in Mallorca in 2020, but it will move to Tee Golf and Country Club, located in the southeast parts of the island. And I'm delighted to say that a man who knows all about topping the Challenge Tour rankings is on the line. 2019 Road to Mallorca champion Francesco Laporta joins us. Francesco, congratulations on topping the rankings. It all seemed to come together towards the end of the season with those two fantastic wins, one in China and, of course, one in Mallorca.
Yeah, it was a great season. So anyway, thanks a lot for the congratulations. And yeah, I changed a lot in the last 2 months, actually, not the last 2 weeks. And I played solid after the Italian Open. So my game was solid for the last 2 months. And I just was pretty comfortable with everything, with my game and with my attitude. So, and then the wins comes. And I was pretty happy about that. I worked hard for that, so I was pretty happy.
So this was just a process, you think? You were always getting there over the course of the season, and you felt justified with those wins late on in the campaign?
I was playing pretty good all year, so I worked pretty hard from when I started here last, when I started here before the Challenge Tour. I said, okay, let me try to work hard for a win and to finish a top 15. And this is what I do for the last 6 months. And actually, the last 2 months was just unreal, incredible, and everything went in the right direction.
Tell us a little bit about your background. You developed your amateur career in Italy, and you played in South Africa as well on the Sunshine Tour. Just tell us about how you got into professional golf.
Yeah, I actually played also the amateur Samhauto competition in South Africa, and then I turned pro like 7 years ago, and I went to Augsburg qualifying school, and I missed it, and then I went to South Africa to the Sunshine Tour. Met birdie on the last to finish in the top 30. And then I played 2 years there. It was a great experience. There's a lot of good players in South Africa, so it's a great school, great golf school. And then I went back, I comes back after 2 years in the Sunshine Tour, went back to the European Tour for 1 year. I wasn't really prepared for that, but I took that year as an experience. And I bring all the experience to the Challenge Tour in the next 3 years. So,
Francesco, it's Reese here. Congratulations on a great season.
Yeah, thanks.
What are your ambitions for the 2020 campaign? What do you believe will be a successful year for you?
The first one is just to keep my card, to secure my card as soon as possible. And then for sure I will try to have a win, or I'll try to do my best every time. And now I got 1 month off for practice and just to prepare all my season. So, yeah, the first thing is just to keep my card for the next year, for 2021.
And Francesco, Pete here, when you have this month off, obviously preparing for the tour, what kind of things are you going to be going through in that time off? Is there any particular practice goals, anything with your swing that you need to get right before the tour? Or what's your process of actually preparing to get back there?
Yeah, I'm working hard in the gym, so I will try to take some more distance with long shot and
getting hench.
I'm working a bit in my golf swing. Actually, I think my golf swing is pretty right, but just I want to be more prepared in the short game. Actually, so I'm going to see my coaches this month. I got two coaches, one here where I live, another one in north of Italy, and then we're gonna talk about the season. We're gonna talk about what went good, what went wrong.
Yeah, Francesco, what do you feel are the strong parts of your game that will help you achieve your goals for 2020?
For sure now is my driver. So I hit my ball pretty straight, and I need just bit more of distance. But I hit my ball pretty straight, and I'm pretty good with the iron, and I'm working with the putting just to make it a bit better. So the last 2 months I putted pretty good. Went to tournament, made some good scores. Short game was pretty good, but you know, sometimes the short game comes and goes. So I'm just gonna try to have my short game more in line, and for sure at my best part of my game is my long shot.
And finally, before we let you go, what was the highlight for you over the course of 2019? What was the biggest thing that you take away from the year?
The best tournament was the Italian Open, because I was playing my home crowd and was a lot of people followed me. In China, yeah, it was my first victory, but when I was playing, I knew if I finished top three, I keep my card. And in the grand final, we played pretty relaxed, all three on the team leader, because we was already in the top 15. But I think so that the best things was Italian Open. It was great tournament to finish top 10 in the Rolex Series. Yeah, the best memories is for sure the Italian Open.
Yeah, seventh place in Italy. And I guess if you needed proof that you could mix it with the best players on the European Tour, that is it, isn't it? Because you competed with the very best that week.
Yeah, it was crazy. So I was feeling so comfortable in the driving range, and I was feeling so comfortable in the course. So before the tournament, I wasn't sure to finish in the top 15 on Challenge Tour, but after that, I said, this is your tour, this is where you want to be, and do everything for this one.
You mentioned you got a month off. When do we see you next?
I'm going to play SA Open, and then Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and Saudi.
Well, we wish you well over the holiday period.
Thanks.
And hopefully you'll come back firing in 2020, and we'll speak again soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot. For sure.
Thanks for coming on the Race to Dubai show. Thanks, Francesco.
Good luck.
Well done.
What a season Francesco Laporta had, a player that you have played with on the Challenge Tour. When you played with him, did you think, yeah, this is a guy that's going to get his card and do so well on the Challenge Tour in 2019?
Yeah, I played with him a couple of years ago, and what I remember about his game is it was very much all round. There was nothing overly... not one impact, not one thing that really stood out, but everything seemed really solid. So it was interesting to see how he struck me as a player who could be quite consistent over a period of time, not necessarily overly spectacular, but to have, I think he had two wins in three events at the end of the year, shows that he obviously can turn it on and make some birdies and win some tournaments. So full credit to him.
It's strange, isn't it? You win two events towards the back end of the year. I guess you don't really want the season to end. And you were speaking to him about what sort of drills he does over the course of the summer. Is it difficult for players to sort of try and keep their form if they're not playing competitive golf? What do they do? What should they not do?
It's the same in any sport, that momentum is everything. You know, if you get on a good run of form, you do want to keep going. And to get on a good run of form at this time of the year, maybe not the best. You know, you prefer to hit it in the middle of the summer, obviously. But I mean, those wins have got to give him confidence. And like I said, in the Rolex Series, finishing that high up as well, and actually playing, you know, really well and mixing up with these boys, I don't see why he shouldn't be going into the season with confidence, especially if he's loading an extra 20 pounds of muscle by the sounds of it.
The sounds of it, yeah.
Full on Bryson DeChambeau, honestly.
Indeedy. What sort of pressure is on Challenge Tour winners the following season, certainly those that have topped the standings, because we start to look at them in different light, don't we? The players that have come through over the last decade, there's more expectation that they're just going to hit the ground running, isn't there? There's a bit of focus and spotlight on them.
Yeah, I think you're right. It'd be interesting to see how he handles that, because it's probably something he hasn't really experienced before. And to all of a sudden have that extra tag on your name, although a great tag that it is, it will bring pressure. And it'd be interesting to see how he handles it. He had obviously spoke about the success at the Italian Open, and that was arguably and understandably his most proud moment. So it shows that he can handle some of the pressures, but there'll be off course pressures associated with winning the Challenge Tour rankings.
Well, let's chat about Q School and the whole process of trying to get your card for the European Tour. Reese, what's your experiences of coming through Q School? You did attempt it, didn't you, this year, but unfortunately crashed out at the second qualifying stage. How difficult is it? What's the vibe going into these events?
Yeah, my experiences at Q School are pretty bad. I'm not gonna lie. They've been very unsuccessful over time. I seem to do better at, shall we say, in inverted commas, more normal events. But no, having said that, it is a unique environment. Obviously, the concept is exactly the same. You're playing golf. You're trying to finish as high up as you can. I think one of the interesting things about Q School is no matter what stage you're at, whether it's first, second, or final, the mix of players is very great. There's a diverse number of players involved from all different countries around the world. But not only that, with different levels of experience, some who are there for the first time and excited to be there, really thriving and looking forward to the challenge, and others who have performed poorly or have not done so well in recent times and have fallen back and hate being there. It's the last place they want to be. It feels bad. Last week you were playing on the European Tour with all the great superstars of the game, and now you're playing with arguably players you've never heard of in front of zero spectators. And there is no atmosphere about it. It's, it's strange. It's a really different dynamic. And therefore, how you approach that is key to whether you can be successful or not.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it's almost more about your mindset than your play. Yes, you've got to play well, but as Reese has just described there, Peter, you're getting golfers, not necessarily different levels, because they're all at a Q School stage for a reason, but they've just come from different backgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the Q School itself wasn't televised this year, and to be honest, it's an event which I would probably watch over a lot of other events that I see, because at the end of the day, you got 25 guys who are just desperate to get that European Tour card. At the end of the day, it's amazing to see Rory McIlroy win an event, but it's just another event for him. You know, it's just another couple of million in the bank. Great, brilliant, excited, move on to next week. This event, you know, you got guys who are desperate scrapping. You can see the pain on the face when it's not quite going well. You can see the delight when they manage to get through. It's a much more engaging and interesting event for a spectator, and probably a lot more of a horrible event for a player, but it makes such amazing drama. And you do get this wonderful mix of players who've been on the tour, dropped down, the young guys going through. So you've just got this massive melting pot of these different pros. I really don't understand why it's not made more of a big deal out on televised. I really don't.
25 places up for grabs. I would imagine that if you're in and around that 25th place, it must be so difficult to try and work out where you are. You know, are you dropping out of that 25? Are you just in? Because it's not like you're playing for top spot, is it?
You mean during the round?
Yeah, during
itself.
The round, during that final round, because you're not looking for the win. And if you were just looking for the win, it's easy. That guy's at the top of the leaderboard, but it must be a bunch of players from 20th to 30th. Or with a stroke or two strokes.
What they do now, though, there is a leaderboard. There are leaderboards, and they have the top, whatever, five or six in the tournament, but they also have that projected cut, which obviously is not a projected cut like a normal week, which is down at
your projected future, I guess.
Exactly. So it'll be whatever, projected cut minus nine or minus 10, and you obviously know where you sit. And yeah, it's amazing how many players are within realms of that projected cut. Like, you might see someone who's fifth or sixth on the leaderboard and you think
they're safe.
He's safe. He's cruising through. he is not thinking that, almost certainly. He might be 6 shots ahead of the projected cut, and it's very hard to cut it out and think, well, as long as I don't make
Par in from here.
Yeah.
It's a great closing way of final call thing, is at Lumine as well, because basically from the 6th, well, from the 15th really, you got tricky par 3, but then you got par 4, water left, water right, about 450. You stood on that tee, you're not a happy bunny. You get on the next, like a 600-yard par 5, water all down the left, you're not a happy bunny. You get on the next, it's a really hard par 3 with just this ridiculous green. Then you get on the last, another par 5, water all down the left. I played in a pro-am there a couple of years ago for nothing, and I was bricking myself. So God knows what these guys are going through when they're seeing that, especially on those holes, you've got a case of the lefts, like, nah. And it is that thing, you know, because you've not got, in a tournament, regular tour event, you're going for a win if you're up there. You're trying to win. If you don't, you know, if you don't win, you know, it's a bit disappointing, but it's fine. As long as you finish in that top 25, that's good. So it is the case that if you're 6 shots clear, like with, if you're 6 shots clear with 6 holes to go, you'd wish it was 10. You know, it's because it can just go and it can just slip away and you can tense up and you can panic and, ah, man. But that's why it's such a good event.
25 places up for grabs. 20 places for Challenge Tour promotion. We mentioned that briefly. Is that about the right number for you? Should it be more or less? It's been increased, hasn't it? Challenge Tour from 15 to 20. Should it be more? How do you see that sort of promotion relegation almost?
Yeah, I'm pleased to see the number of spots have been increased to 20. I think that's justified and worthy. I'd like to see a greater respect and impetus put into the Challenge Tour. I think there are the strength and depth is far, far greater now than when it was first introduced. I think there are so many good players, and that's proven. Look at the leaderboard we had just this week. And I think it would be great to sort of indirectly force some of the players who lose their card the previous year to go back and play the Challenge Tour. Yes, you can't force anyone to play golf. I don't mean that physically, obviously. I mean it by a way of, if you can get through the Challenge Tour, you can obviously have more opportunities to get through the Challenge Tour. You can get back to the main European Tour. I think that it will increase the strength of the Challenge Tour further, which will mean better tournaments, better courses to play, and the players who come off it will be even better, that will then prove worthy and play extremely well on the main European Tour.
Benjamin Pope won it this year, a huge achievement, obviously. What do we know about Mr. Pope? A new name on me, someone that you come across over the course of the last year or two, Rhys?
No, I'm afraid not. I'm not up to speed with Mr. Pope, but I will say that that is an exceptional achievement. His scores were fantastic, and you know, whichever way you look at it, that is a tournament win. And whenever you win a tournament as a professional golfer, you've beaten a lot of other exceptionally good players. And that will only give you confidence and belief and, yeah, taking it forward into a season. You know, we spoke to Francesco Laporta and he won 2 big tournaments at the end of the Challenge Tour. And this is another big tournament. And, yeah, let's see how he does this season.
It's a valid point, isn't it, Petey? If you can play under that sort of pressure, if it comes quickly to you on the Challenge Tour, on the European Tour, or in any event when you're under that sort of pressure again, you can certainly feed off what's happened to you in that particular tournament.
Yeah, especially the Challenge Tour. I think it's a fantastic grounding for these young guys just before they go out into the main tour. You know, it teaches them about tour life, it teaches them about travel, it teaches them about, you know, competition stretched over weeks against some really good players. I think it's a fantastic way to go, and I think it should be strengthened.
Rhys, we mentioned that unfortunately you didn't manage to get through Q School. You've got a little bit of status as a past European Tour champion for 2020. What does the immediate future hold for you, do you think?
Yeah, at the moment I'm not entirely sure, Dan. I've been looking at my options over the last few weeks. I'd say I've only recently just completed Q School just a couple of weeks ago. So I'd put, you know, my main focus and impetus into that. And I'd said I'd let the dust settle, so to speak, before I look at my options further ahead. I don't have to make any immediate decisions and what I'm thinking of. But I'm just going to enjoy Christmas at home with my family and look to push on into something in the new year.
In the blurb that our producer gives us, this is the line, Rhys. Once described by Colin Montgomery as being the man with the $1 million putting stroke. How is your putting these days?
Yeah, he's correct. Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's right. Yeah.
That was always your strength, wasn't it?
Always is, yeah, still is.
Still is.
Still is. No, I'm confident in my putter. I know, I've often nearly always been good. I've had little dips like anyone, but consistently it's a real strong part of my game. I've understood it more and more over the years. And I back myself against most as to knowing, yeah, holding putts is a strength of mine. The other stuff, that's more of a challenge. I'm not gonna lie, that's always been difficult. But putting-wise, yeah, it's good.
Well, we wish you well, obviously, for 2020. Peter, you've just told us before we recorded this that you've been in Japan for the Rugby Union World Cup and you've enjoyed yourself tremendously over there. Mm. You've got to get back in shape over this holiday period. That's going to be tough for you, or is it?
Oh, it's going to be tough, yeah. I now need to work on my pound shot putting stroke as well.
I'm
basically the opposite. It's like the more and more that I've looked at my stroke, the less and less I understand it. And my long game's getting better, yeah. But that might be the extra weight just slowing me down since Japan.
That is your lot for now. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we'll have a full preview of the Australian PGA Championship. Plus, we'll talk about the European Tour's commitment to make golf all-inclusive. Disability golfer Ian St. John will join us. But for now, from Rhys Davies. Rhys, been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed it.
And from Peter Finch.
Goodbye.
Thanks for getting here eventually.
Yeah, thank you.
And from me, Dan Roebuck. It is goodbye. We'll speak soon.